Every Woman is a womanish show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project, Incorporated. Good afternoon. I'm Amy Bell. Sharon Lockhart is away today, and we have got a really great show that is about the spiritual side of the feminine with author Kathleen McCartan. So we will get right into that as soon as we hear this week's Cheers and Jeers. Cheers and Jeers from Women's E! News. Cheers. Mayor de Blasio has begun a recent subsidy program that seeks to move 1,900 homeless families who are victims of domestic violence from shelters into permanent housing during the plan's first year. The New York Times reported November 10th. Counseling efforts will also be increased within public housing, where domestic violence is especially high. Officials said they were also taking steps to relax admission requirements, such as expanding the range of crimes that constitute abuse, in order to place up to 100 abused families in public housing by the end of this year. More news to cheer this week. Barbara Streisand is lending her voice to a campaign to raise awareness and spark action against heart disease, USA Today reported November 12th. More women than men have died of heart disease each year since 1984. Heart disease kills more women than all cancers combined, Streisand said during an interview with USA Today. In an attempt to tackle sexual harassment, many women suffer on public transportation in France. Feminist group Osez le Féminisme, Dare Feminism, launched a campaign to take back the metro, BuzzFeed reported November 11th. The group hopes its posters will expose the insecurity of women in public spaces and especially on public transport, and symbolically reclaim the space. Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus R. Vance, Jr. pledged $35 million in funding to help eliminate the backlog of untested evidence in sexual assault cases in cities across the United States, Reuters reported November 12th. Around the country, what happens to those kits? We hear from police and prosecutors is that they want badly to test these kits, but they lack the funds, Vance said at a news conference. McDonald's workers from New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles began traveling to 8 countries on 3 continents beginning November 10th to enlist fast food workers, the Philippine Daily Inquirer reported November 13th. Women are 2/3 of people employed in low-wage jobs in industries such as fast food. Follow the tour on Twitter via the hashtag FastFoodGlobal. Forensic Nurse Week from November 10th to 14th gave the International Association of Forensic Nurses a chance to raise awareness of their work as the first responders to victims and perpetrators of violence who enter healthcare settings. These nurses provide care, collect evidence, and provide consultation in a variety of areas, including sexual assault, domestic violence, child abuse and neglect, death investigation, elder mistreatment, corrections, emergency services, mental health, and public health. In Jeers, authorities in India have arrested the doctor they say performed botched tubal ligations that sickened dozens and killed at least 13 women in an unsanitary sterilization camp in rural India over the weekend. The Washington Post reported November 13th. At least 11 women have died and 62 were hospitalized after undergoing sterilization surgery at a government-run mobile health clinic in India, CNN reported November 12th. Locals say more than 80 women were operated on in just 6 hours by one doctor and his assistant. Such surgeries usually require 30 minutes for preparation and sterilization of equipment alone. Each woman was compensated 600 rupees, or about $10, and all of the women were poor. India carries out about 37% of the world's female sterilizations. More news to cheer this week. Two Pakistani brothers were arrested for killing their mother and two teenage stepsisters after accusing them of adultery. 124 News reported November 12th. Last year, 869 women died in honor killings, according to the Independent Human Rights Commission of Pakistan. The 2014 midterm elections will not be dubbed the Year of the Woman, the Brookings Institution reported November 10th. The summary finds and the next several election cycles will likely fall short as well. Authors Jennifer L. Lawless and Richard L. Fox describe an underlying gender gap in political ambition. Julian Fisher's mother has worked at Kmart for 21 years, but her mother still doesn't know if she's going to be told to work on Thanksgiving this year, even with the holiday 2 weeks away, Think Progress reported November 13th. Women in high-achieving fields are paid less than men, even with similar levels of experience, Bloomberg Businessweek reported November 14th. Women graduating business school reported expecting $14,548 less in annual pay than men. In every field, women were paid less than men based on a survey of graduating MBAs over 112 schools. Women entering finance reported the largest pay gap, with women earning close to $22,000 less than men.
Guest DJ Suzanne Spoon brings the women who rock to Moby's Trip, Sunday night at 10.
Be sure to tune in to Eco Radio this week as we talk to Zach Pastoria, the Sierra Club's legislative lobbyist in Topeka, about current hot environmental issue. That's Monday at 6 p.m.
And we are back, and you're listening to Every Woman. We are here with Kathleen McCartan, who has 30 years of PhD scholarship, an 18-year spiritual journey, and a whole lot of trauma behind her. And she's got a book that has been 14 years in the making that she's coming here to talk to us about today. What led you to publish this book after all this time?
Well, like I said, my name is Dr. Kathleen McCartan. And to be honest with you, and if you read my book, you'll see this very clearly. Since 2000, I have technically been labeled bipolar with bipolar disorder. And when I say technically, I think when you read my book, it will create a lot of controversy about the fact that I also believe I'm a sensitive clairvoyant. And if you're not sure of what that means, essentially it means that I receive spiritual messages. And at another point, that would have sounded really weird. But I believe in 2014, there's more and more people that believe there's more to what we see than what we see with our physical eyes. So I was, to be honest, motivated by guts, by courage, by determination, by proving to people that being bipolar actually oftentimes makes you more intelligent than the average person. It doesn't necessarily make you less. And I've been very prejudiced against. I've lost two jobs, even though I was incapacitated for one day each. I was an academic dean and a program chair. And so one of the many reasons I'm writing this book is to triumph all people in the world who have any form of mental illness, because there's a great deal of stigma against it, and I think that's a sad statement of our culture.
And what is the title of your book, and what's the concept behind it?
The title of my book is He Could Not Contain Her, the Wind of the Holy Spirit. And I want to make it clear that her, H-E-R, and wind, W-I-N-D, are capitalized on my book cover. And the reason I want to make an emphasis on that is this is a very strong sacred feminine book. And to me, the Holy Spirit, which is the voice I tried to most strongly take in this book, is the sacred feminine. That even though many religious traditions have said that the Holy Spirit is a man, I believe that the Holy Spirit is a woman, a man, and an it. But because she's into connection, working together, loving one another, coming to each other's aid, having each other's back, being flexible, all the traditional concepts we associate with the feminine, that I believe the Holy Spirit has a very strong feminine bent, and that's a very obvious theme in my book.
And when you're talking about sacred feminine, do you feel like that's something that we don't see very often, that most people aren't seeing the sacred feminine and viewing themselves within this idea that femininity can be a part of that Holy Spirit?
Oh, most definitely. I believe every one of my listeners today, and I hope that they spread the message, but if you take out everything else and you just use the word sacred, if you think about it, in the current culture that we live in, there is, I'm sorry, but this is the truth, so I'm just going to say it. There is a 90% emphasis on the male preacher, the male priest, the male guru, the male spiritual higher than thou. There is almost a complete emphasis, actually to me, even in the spiritual community, on the male aspect to it. But there's very little to the sacred feminine aspect to it. I mean, women are holy too. Women have children. You know, women take care of their men. Women, even as I put in chapter 2, and this is quite controversial, so I hope if you read it, you think and reflect on it. But even oftentimes those men that hurt them or abuse them, many times women are loyal. And am I saying that's a good thing? No, it's a terrible thing. It's an awful thing, and they never should do that. They should never be abused. My only point is that women take on oftentimes the pain of the world. And to me, that does make them sacred, definitely.
Does it kind of change the way we look at spirituality when we have more leaders who are female? And some religions do allow for female spiritual guidance, but there are still a lot of them who do not.
Oh, absolutely. And as I was telling Amy earlier when we were preparing for this, in chapter 3 of my book, I'm very strongly telling the story of, based on about 18 years of research and 10 years of reading obsessively, really, about the supposed or what I believe to be truthful and accurate relationship between Jesus Christ and Mary Magdalene. And in there as well, I talk quite a bit about the concept of Gnosticism. And I can simplify it for you if you're not familiar with that term. But Gnosis or Gnosticism is the notion that each person, every single one of us, so 7 billion people, can individually, without any help from anyone else, directly reach God. Directly. That you can know God absolutely 100% yourself without any intervention from anyone else. And so, yes, I do believe religion is important, and to some people it means a whole lot, and that tradition and that community and feeling you're part of a larger movement, I think that's wonderful. I don't want to put anything negative toward that. My only point is that really in the end, it comes down to you, and nobody else can attest to you. Nobody else can speak for you. No one else can justify your life or how you lived your life. It's just basically you and our Creator. And I believe our Creator, this sounds strange, but I believe it after 20 years of spiritual thinking, is absolutely in some way almost a creator and an evolutionist, because I believe that all things created were created by somebody, and it certainly wasn't us. We didn't create cats. We didn't create kangaroos. We didn't create the mountains. So somebody had to. And as I put in my book as well, I firmly believe that I'm only one piece of the evolutionary puzzle, and I totally 110% believe, and this is in my book, that we are an evolving species. Taking our time with it, but we're turning into something else. And what I believe that is it's a spiritually conscious society, that we literally start to understand that we're one species, that all humans are literally one connected entity.
When you talk about Gnosticism, one thing that I had always understood, and perhaps I'm not as familiar with it as I should be, was that there were alternative gospels, and that the idea that there were no women followers of the Christ, and that, you know, there's only this very limited view of the teachings, of the Christian teachings, and that when you talk about the Magdalene in your book, that is that part of the Gnostic thing? Is recognizing that Mary Magdalene had a story that was told as well? Does that come from the Gnostic perspective?
Absolutely. And just to tell you that this is strange, but it's real. This is accurate. This is 110% accurate in the real world we live in. Today, 2014, as I put in the last page of my Magdalene chapter, chapter 3, they just came out with an ancient scroll that has proven to be completely accurate and reliable and authentic. And it basically is one sentence. And it said, "She, my wife, will be my disciple." And there was just a book came out, as Amy just said, which basically said the lost gospels, that these gospels that are coming out, including the ones that came out in 1945 in Egypt, are the lost gospels. And I would argue that it makes perfect sense that knowledge, that wisdom, that truth would circulate forever. Why would it quit 2014 years ago? We're getting new knowledge all the time because that's part of consciousness. That's part of the evolving species that we're part of.
Would you be comfortable if we opened the phone lines up to take
no.
some calls?
I would like to say one thing for a couple of minutes first before we open up the phone lines. And another very obvious bent of my book, which you'll see if you read it, and if you do, you'll learn so much, if nothing else. You might want to check out my website, www.wildchildearthhealer.com, and check that out to see if that intrigues you. But the other thing I want to make note of, especially since this is an environmental radio station and is very pro-environment, is I feel that we're at a critical time with our environment. And we can either go toward cleaner energies, supporting environmental causes, establishing a safe haven for the animals that are currently alive, as well as stopping production of more drilling. And to me, it's a cop-out, quite frankly, to not be accountable as an individual. So for any of my audience that is listening, that gets on websites, that petitions for animals to have safe havens, that supports drives, that makes sure that we're protecting our children's future and our children's children's future. And I have been told through visions, and that sounds strange, I know, but if you read my book, you'll know I have visions. And I have seen through visions that if we maintain what we have and we move toward clean energy, which is wind and sun, that we can have the brightest future imaginable. And I'm not kidding. And we can have a new millennium for our children. Give them a brand spanking new earth. So I just want to put that plug in and say, spread the message. This is a critical time. And just be accountable. We all need to be accountable for the environment that is our earth, our home.
Do you think that that's actually our spiritual duty?
Yes.
Duty.
Yes.
To
yes.
The earth.
Yes. Yes. Our earth is our home. She is a living being. I represented the Holy Spirit in my book. She is a living person. She is a living, breathing person. Just like animals, just like us. She has rights. She has rights like the rest of us. She has the right to be treated with dignity. She has the right to be treated with respect. She has the right to have her limits. Just like everybody else. So this is the time to step up to the plate. And I'm talking about everyday, ordinary people. Don't be apathetic. Get on one side or the other, but get on a side and stick to it. Do you want politics to rule, or do you want the environment to rule? And that's exactly where we're at now. And I certainly know what I want to rule.
Our phone number is 816-931-5534. If you would like to add to this conversation or ask some questions, we'd be happy to get this deeper spiritual and philosophical discussion that encompasses so much. I mean, a lot of times the idea of spirituality is pushed off to the fringe. And when you're presenting this spirituality, it's not something that one person believes in or another person believes in. It's more of a thing that's all around us all the time, whether we acknowledge it or not, that is within us and is a responsibility that we carry towards other things.
It is living.
Yes.
It's living.
Where did you find this path? Like, how do you come to understand spirituality in a much more earthbound sense?
Well, as I told you to wrap up where I started today, which is what motivated me to publish this book, and essentially I've been labeled bipolar. And as I very strongly put in my book, I also believe I'm spiritually clairvoyant. I have a better sense of the living pulse and presence of God on earth than the average person because of all my trauma. I've had four mental breakdowns, which have been very stressful for me. They've interrupted my life in so many ways I wouldn't have loved. But at the other side, my trauma has helped me focus on exactly what matters, exactly what important. And when I get up every day, I have my two beautiful children I look at. I have a picture of the earth, and I'm covered by animals. And that's what the Creator loves. This material crap that's everywhere, all this material crap, it means nothing to our Creator. If anything else, it's a distraction for our Creator. It distracts from living relationships with animals, each other, and the earth. And we've lost that. People don't even talk anymore. People talk to boxes. People talk to computers. People talk to their phones. No one even has civil conversations anymore. So I'd love you to Twitter it and Facebook it, but I don't, quite frankly, do that myself. I put on pictures of starving animals to motivate people, but I feel a lot of it is me, how great I am. And certainly we all have talents, but we all have a lot to learn from each other as well. And that to me is what spirituality is about, which is loving and connecting and touching others.
You know, I think you've really hit on something that is a challenge for a lot of people. A lot of people that have been guests on this show, and even people who have called in, have frustrations with trying to motivate people to get up from the computer. It's one thing to post something on Facebook that says you support the environment or you support preventing things.
That's all wonderful, wonderful.
But you know, and you support feminism and you support racial justice, but we really have a severe drought of people. I'm hearing this from groups all over the place, that there's a severe drought of people who are actually showing up to a meeting, showing up to a rally. After the election a couple weeks ago, showing up to vote. And I think that sometimes we have these things in front of us that allow us to feel active, but those things that really matter, like showing up to vote, showing up to a meeting, it's less and less likely that a person's going to take that active step.
Exactly. I think it's part of a culture that no longer takes accountability for what they do. I'd say the main disease we have as a culture is apathy. And to me, I would take someone to rally for one side over the other to apathy. I mean, quite frankly, I'm amazed I send these pictures of dying animals, animals that we're destroying their habitats, they're in people's backyards searching through trash because they don't have any space to live, and I'll paste these on Facebook and no one even gives them a second even look. They don't even bother with them, and they're back to their trivial human games. And I think we just live in a fantasy world. I mean, you know, this is real life. I mean, the internet has made people feel like they live in some fantasy world, and that's just a box. I mean, it's not the real world.
Are people being desensitized?
Yes.
Do you believe? I mean, we've had a lot of times the community will even call in and say, we are desensitized to violence. We've had peace activists groups here that have a very, very broad definition of what violence is. But you don't have to get terribly picky about what you would call violence to see it on a daily basis and in our media, in our entertainment media, and even just on Facebook. I see a lot of those starving animals, and I think I might be one of those people that at this point, oh, there's another starving animal, go on with my day.
I just can't do that. I'm too tender-hearted. But to tag off what you said, Amy, I make an interesting point. Well, I think I'm biased, but I think I make an interesting point in my book, which is how to solve the peace violence issue and do it in a diplomatic way. And that is basically we do what two ducks do in a book. I'm sure some of you have heard, A New Earth, which is, I believe, what we're moving toward, if I get my way, a beautiful, spanking, new, rejuvenated earth. And what I say in there is like two ducks, you butt heads and you go your own separate way. So my vision of the world as I see it, and I've actually had real visions, is people go two different directions. People that are loving and kind go one direction and the other people go the next. And that accelerates as we move toward a spiritual consciousness, while other people go to the lowest level possible, and we're seeing this splitting that's happening.
We're certainly moving into an age of extremes.
Yes,
and that I can hear that there's some hope in the way you present that, but at the same time, I also hear that there's some pretty scary things going on when people who have violent tendencies and a violent mindset move off in the same direction together and congregate. Do we not have a higher risk for very dangerous, violent outbursts within our society?
Well, you know, and I hate to put this burden on my listeners today, because I have this feeling that anyone listening to an Every Woman show already busts their butt and tries as much as possible to make this world better and, you know, that works very hard. So I hate to give you this burden, but honestly, I think it's going to have to come down to us spiritual people. It's going to have to come down to our level of understanding about what really matters and what works in the world. So I know it's not fair, but I think we're just going to have to turn the heat up, be even more that way, speak out about the environment, speak out about getting along, speaking out about not doing little piddly games. I mean, people ripping on each other, you know, celebrities ripping on each other, people ripping on each other. I mean, that only makes it worse. So we have to be the examples that other people can follow.
We need to pause for just a minute to hear a couple of announcements, and we'll be right back.
This can sound overwhelming. Anything about climate change can sound overwhelming, and it's certainly easier to talk about changing light bulbs than changing the economy. But here's what we need to remember. It's not like we're talking about an economy that is working beautifully except for the small matter of rising sea levels.
That's Naomi Klein on the next Alternative Radio, Wednesday morning at 9.
Popular opinions of presidential history, such as Lincoln was superb, Pierce was disastrous, hold up to scrutiny. Other perceptions don't hold up so well. Did Reagan really end the Cold War? Was Obamacare rammed through without Congress reading it? There's some surprising answers to these questions. Professor Max Skidmore, who's a professor of political science at UMKC, will shed light on these and other interesting facts about the U.S. presidents this Wednesday at noon on the All Souls Forum right here on KKFI.
All right, and we are back. This is Every Woman, and you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We are talking with Kathleen McCartan, who has written a book titled He Could Not Contain Her, The Wind of the Holy Spirit. And we're talking about this concept that is somewhat elusive, but very tangible to many of us, of the sacred feminine. And in her book, the sacred feminine takes on some forms that I think we don't necessarily think of in traditional spiritual thinking. One thing that I was very fascinated is she was, you were explaining to me, I'll talk to you now. I'm talking to everybody. Now I'm going to talk to you. You were explaining to me about the idea of sin being the fault of woman and how you have reinterpreted that. Because I know that the idea that sin is the fault of woman keeps a lot of women away from the spiritual realm.
Couple of comments there. First, I'd actually like to start with a documented quote by Jesus, and it's not one that's well known, but it's certainly known by many scholars, and that Jesus says there is no such thing as sin. He says there's just mistakes. And if you read chapter 3 of my book, which to me is very interesting, I think anyone could learn from it, Jesus said that at the beginning of time, and this is in reference to the Course of Miracles, if you're familiar with that text, I think it's one of the best books, spiritual books, that's been written in at least 100 years. But in that book, it says that there was a mistake made. And humans turned away from each other and away from our source instead of toward each other. And I think it makes a whole lot of sense. And if you are interested in my book, I think you'd learn quite a bit about that in Chapter 3. And Chapter 1 with Lucifer, I use Lucifer, known as the devil, Mary Magdalene, Jesus, John the Baptist. And I turn the original story of creation on its head and say that when Lucifer rejected a woman as a spiritual equal, in God's eyes, so that she was just as powerful as Lucifer. That was actually the original mistake, and that's actually why Lucifer was kicked out of heaven. So I believe that. There's documentation out there. I give you that documentation in my book. So I'm not just pulling this out of thin air. I'm actually using scholarship.
Now, is this a back to a Gnostic text? Because when you're talking about the fall of Lucifer, you're talking pre-Genesis.
Yeah, I kind of cover it all in my book. I kind of go from, like, before original Christianity, through original Christianity, all the way till the very latest spiritual theory, the law of attraction, which I'm sure some of you have heard, the hot law of attraction. That's my chapter two. So I go from the very beginning of time pretty much all the way till current day. That's why it's a little longer book. But I promise you it's an easy read. I do. I'm a pretty decent writer.
Well, what would you kind of give as advice for people to be improving the world around them?
I can do that so simply, listeners. Honestly, I can do it so simply. And having probably, and when you, or if you read my book, you'll know this as a fact, but probably having one of the most creative brains out there, and I think that's due to my either sensitive clairvoyant or bipolar nature or the gifted mind or whatever you want to call it, like, you know, Einstein, Van Gogh, although mine isn't to that level, but I still have that kind of a phone off. Get in a room. Get paper. Get markers. I go to the dollar store. Just get a couple of markers. Just create. Use your creative imagination. So that's number one. Number two, get more in touch with nature. You know, every day, several times during the day, I go out. I just sit on my porch. I just look at the squirrels. I look at the tree. And it's so soothing. People forget that. I mean, it's a natural soothing thing. It relaxes us. So get close to nature, be creative, and definitely think outside the box. I mean, I'm a radical. I'm close to nature, be creative, and definitely think outside the box. I mean, I'm a radical. I'm a revolutionist. I don't think the way other people think. I think the way I want to think. And too many people think the way everybody else thinks. And that's what is making the world kind of boring and so-so, the same old, same old. We're doing the same old thing. We're not learning anything and changing anything. And then lastly, be accountable. Be accountable to yourself and be the kind of person you want someone else to be, and then lead by example. Just simply don't get in their face. Just lead by example.
Is that hard for women?
Yes. I think women tend to shy away. I was telling Amy earlier and Karen, I feel at 48 I'm more empowered as a woman than any other time in my life. So, yes, I think especially younger women are afraid to. They're afraid to cross the norm, to do anything outside the box. And that's all to be considered, you know, too much of a bitch or whatever have you. And that's sad. I mean, and it's especially sad since it's 2014. It's not 00 BC. It's not 1960. It's 2014. So as I said earlier, women have to try even harder. Use whatever charm, whatever wherewithal we have, because we're the ones that teach connection. We're the ones that teach working together. We're the ones that are the protectors, the mama hawk, the eagle protecting our flock. We're the ones that are doing that. So we have to protect the men and the children and the animals. We have to protect it all. And that's a big responsibility. But I know we can. We just have to speak out. And that's why I wrote my book. I wanted to speak out in writing what's hard for me to speak in public.
I know that a lot of our listeners do feel like they're kind of beating their head against a wall sometimes as women, trying to get people to listen to them when they really have a very good point to make, a very well-researched statement, expertise even. A lot of times for women, expertise isn't even respected. And we were kind of talking about sometimes the subtlety that it takes to get an opinion heard for a woman, and, you know, how tired some of us are of having to steer someone into believing us rather than being trusted.
Oh my gosh, there's a point I make in my book which is so focused on this. And what I talk about is women need to stop doing it according to male rules. Male rules are always domination, fight to the finish, competition. The bigger dog wins, the smaller dog loses. Fight, fight, fight. And what I say is that for 47 years of my life, including being an academic dean twice and a program chair in highly competitive for-profit schools. Now at 48, I want to use the best strengths that women have. So use those alternative methods. Use connection. Use working together. Love them more. Love them more. Love men more. Be more patient with them. You know, I know that sounds oxymoron. I know that sounds reversal of thought. I know that sounds something like the opposite of what you want to do, but I'm telling you, it works. I have found it to work, especially in the last couple years of my life, that as soon as I give up trying to play by men's rules, they come my way and they start playing by mine.
That is quite a feat.
It took time. Took years.
And is that part of what this book is?
Yes.
Is how to set your own rules of your, the way you play life.
Yep. Especially for women.
We've got a couple more announcements that we need to listen to, and then we're going to come back, and I have a question that I really have been dying to ask you.
Oh, no.
I'll be gentle.
In September of 2014, Women Rising Radio rode the People's Climate Train coast to coast with over 200 activists heading to New York for the largest climate march in history. Hear the sounds of that spirited train ride on Making Contact, Thursday at 12:30 p.m.
This week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
I believe our grandchildren will look back on us now and marvel that our economy was once dependent on chemicals that were killing the planet and killing ourselves, and they will think of it as unthinkable.
I'm Neil Harvey. Please join us for Motherhood, Faith, and the Environmental Human Rights Movement on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
Friday morning at 9:30, right before Eclectic.
And we are back, and you are listening to Every Woman. I'm Amy Bell, and we are here with guest Kathleen McCartan, who has recently written a book called He Could Not Contain Her, Wind of the Holy Spirit. And I did threaten before we went on to this break here that I had a question that I've been kind of dying to ask you, and I did want to save it towards the end because it is one of the topics that I think women probably need to talk more about. And we touched on it briefly with the idea that there are some people who are migrating toward a more violent culture. But we talked, when we were talking before you came into the program at all, we talked about the concept of the predator, the person who is actually seeking to do harm to an individual, to society. And I was wondering, what do you see that predator as, and how do we cope with the predatory nature in some of our fellow human beings?
Well, what I love about this talk is we're covering almost every chapter in my book in some sense. So this should give you a well-rounded view. And this is talked about extensively in Chapter 2. And not only do I talk about it as individuals being predatorial, but that we live in a predatorial society, and that even big-time politicians and other people in positions of power, business people, are predatorial too in terms of how they go about their business of being number one. But the specific thing, because of time, that I want to focus on is, first of all, I want to say that I had a 12-year experience with a predator, or what could be considered a predatorial relationship. So this isn't just something that I'm making up. So I'm basing it on solid research, basically, in my own way. And what I argue in my book, which once again is controversial, a lot of stuff in my book is. Some people like that, some people don't. But I certainly think that this world needs to be changed, and I needed to say some of the things that needed to be changed. And I actually argue isolate them, have nothing to do with predators. Just almost act as if they're not in the world. Ignore them as much as possible. And I know that sounds strange, but if anyone knows a predator or has known one, you'll know that the thing they hate more than anything is to be ignored. They cannot stand to be ignored. That's almost worse than anything else. So that's what I basically say, and that as a society, as a culture, instead of watching crime TV, cops, all these sensationalist murder trials and all of this other stuff, if we just stop watching it, stop focusing on it, stop giving them any attention, I truly believe it would be much less of a problem as individuals and as a culture.
Do you see that there are a lot of people that are complacent with the predator, that they either don't recognize the predator or they don't really see anything wrong with predatory behavior, or they just feel that if they're nice to predatory people that everything will get better, rather than the avoidance that you have just prescribed?
Well, my own personal view is, and this goes back to women, and again, if there's any male listeners today, I want to make it very clear that men can be abused. And I know a man, in fact, that was and even still is being abused. So I don't want to discount that they cannot. But I think all of us would agree it's mainly women. And I would say a lot of it is because that undying love, and that's what I argued in my relationship and why I stayed for so long. I thought, if I just love him enough, if I just do enough for him, I can change him. I can give him a heart. I can make him into a romantic man on a white horse. So I think for many women, it's that fantasy image that it's our responsibility to save people, and especially save evil men or predatorial men. So I think it's more out of naivety more than anything else. Or, of course, also family upbringing, as well as societal expectations for what women should endure.
Well, you did make a very interesting point. That is, sometimes it's not naivety. Sometimes it is actually people crave the danger, the predatory nature of other people. And is that unhealthy? Is that some form of mental illness? You know, when you're talking about championing mental illness as a concept and people with mental illness, Is that an illness that people have, to feel drawn to the danger and the predatory nature in others?
It's funny, you're setting me up. That's my whole theme of Chapter 2. The title of it is Looking at Society from the Outside In Rather than the Inside Out. And I look at a specific relationship that I was in between someone bipolar and someone predatorial. And I say that's the worst match, because you're exactly right. I was susceptible to being in a relationship with a predator because I'm bipolar. And as anybody can tell you, you have more emotions, you're more feeling. And I guess as well, he was more attracted to me because I was more naive and sensitive, and he could play with my emotions like a heartstring, even more than someone else. So most definitely, I think that people that have some kind of a differentness or a mental illness, depression too, are more susceptible to getting involved in that kind of relationship.
We do spend a lot of time on this show talking about violence perpetrated against women in various forms, human trafficking and domestic abuse and rape, and you know, I don't want to necessarily give listeners the idea that there is a certain person who's more susceptible than others and that you can prevent it by how you behave, because that's not necessarily, and I don't think that's what you're saying either. But a little bit of what I heard, you know, was that, you know, certain people, because of who they are more susceptible, which we also see a lot of people who you wouldn't think would be susceptible becoming and falling victim to predatory individuals. Do you have any comment based on that, the way that even people who aren't necessarily predisposed can fall into the trap of this predatory individual?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as I lay out in Chapter 2, absolutely anyone is susceptible to it. But I would just say that the research definitely proves, like for instance now at 48, because I've basically been in a relationship with three very extreme narcissists, now I'm educated.
Right.
Now I, trust me, I can spot them from a zillion miles away. So it's simply a process of education. So studies prove that especially younger women, they're more susceptible. And then as you get older and you get wiser, you're more aware of people, aware of people's personality, etc. So I would say any time a woman, or a man for that matter, is more vulnerable, if they're just simply at a more vulnerable point in their life, they're more susceptible to attracting someone that's predatorial, because predatorial people thrive on taking people that are weak or are labile, emotionally unstable. That's just a fact. So that's mentally ill or not, regardless.
Well, is that something that women as spiritual leaders really have an imperative to help prevent, to help teach the younger women and the more naive, just by the nature of where they are in their life, not in, by any sort of deficiency that they have, how to spot and avoid and protect themselves emotionally and spiritually?
Well, actually, Amy, I argue the opposite in my book. I say that I read all the literature for 7 years before I left my predator on him. What a narcissist is, how to spot him, what he looks like, what he sounds like. And I knew for 7 years that's who he was. So what I argue in my book and the advice I would give my listeners, men or women, is get to know yourself. Get to know your trigger points. Get to know who you are. Know yourself inside and out. And then when you know yourself and you understand yourself, you're more aware of people that are trying to take advantage of that. So I would say, understand yourself. You know, now that I'm a strong, strong person, that'll never happen to me again. So,
well, thank you, Kathleen, for being here with us today. And could you just one more time give our listeners your website so that if they would like some more information on this admittedly very large topic, and it's a large book, I'll say that too.
Easy read though. No, my website is www.wildchildearthhealer.com. Facebook.com. And I want to make the comment that the reason, which is quite rare in this day and age, that I don't have a picture either on my book or my website is I'm trying to say I'm giving you objective information. So I'm showing you how the world really is and how I want the world to be. So I really tried to make it objective so that you could actually see the things that need to be improved so we can have what I hope someday, which is a spiritual utopia where we all just live in love and harmony, and I do believe it's possible.
Well, that is a very hopeful message to end on. And I want to remind everyone to stay tuned for Urban Connections with Donna Wolf and guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson.